You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Welcome back to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, episode number 20. And once again, we are joined by a really great guest. We've got Rachel in studio with Ruhi this week to talk a little bit about some experiences she had growing up and her amazing story. But without further ado, I'll let Ruhi handle the introductions. Take it away, Ruhi.
Thank you, Mike. We have today Rachel Hartley with us on Sleep and Society podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I am happy to have you here, actually.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. We've been chatting for over, I think, 2 years now.
Yeah.
And we met at CrossFit.
Yes.
You joined, did you join just before me or just after me?
I feel like I joined maybe, it was very similar around the same time as you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've been fascinated, as you know, by your life story because you have such an interesting, you had such an interesting childhood and you'd overcome phenomenal adversity. And I wanted to actually talk about that today. I wanted to talk about your adversity, first of all, and especially how it was in terms of sleep, considering this is Sleep and Society podcast, and how it created resilience and all of those awesome things that we want our children to have.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your childhood.
Okay. I'm from Victoria, BC.
Beautiful. I love it.
Love that place. I've lived there my entire life until just couple years ago, moved out to Ontario. Childhood. I am from a little, it's like a, called a village, but it's just a little town outside of Victoria. And I played basketball. I had two brothers. I have an older and a younger brother. I swam. I did track and field. Mm-hmm. I did all those fun things in elementary school.
You were always oriented towards sports? Like, that was your... I think BC is very... I think I find that it's, like, very open to those things. Like, everyone so far that I've met is, like, either hiking or they're swimming or they're...
Yeah.
Or they're skiing. Like, it's pretty... So far.
Pretty so active. Far, yeah. I'd say, like, definitely my parents are very encouraging of, like, team sports. They believe, like, you learn a lot. Mm-hmm. As a kid, to play on a team, not just playing a sport that's just yourself, like tennis or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they really encouraged team sports from an early age. So I always was playing like soccer or basketball or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I also loved, I loved like drawing and dressing up and like playing and putting on a show for people. That was also like part of it. My grandma
so
had
both
like
creative.
A, yeah, definitely
as well,
incorporated
sports.
Everything.
Yeah.
Like my brother and I would always play make believe and like dress up and do that. We'd have like huge pieces of paper on the ground just drawing like crazy, crazy things. Or we'd go onto our cul-de-sac and we'd have like chalk and we'd draw like giant cities that we'd have to like race around with our scooter. Or, like skateboard.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. So you like it was the creative aspect of these 100%. Imaginary playgrounds and then actual incorporating play into it.
100%.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I loved that. It was so much fun.
Yeah. I did. Yeah. That's so interesting because the way I did with my children and even with the neighborhood children was actually incorporating imagination into the idea of physical activity and creating this play where we would have even those rocks we have in front of Lake Ontario, we would call them little mountains and how to climb little mountains so we can climb big mountains and create these imaginary dragons and dinosaurs. And
I had that all the time.
Yeah,
my mom was really good with that. She was an amazing make-believe. She's the one who really encouraged the sports and team aspect, but she also was like love playing make believe, and I think that's where I get a lot of it, especially when I like see children and stuff.
Yeah.
Hang out with like younger cousins or nieces or nephews. I love playing make believe with them.
Then something happened to you.
Yes.
When you were in grade five.
Grade six, actually. Yeah. No, grade seven.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it was in that very, six, seven.
How old were you?
I was 12, I believe, when it happened. So
just pre-adolescence, or were you in going into
like I was just starting
entering adolescence?
Yeah, just starting puberty, like just around that time. Yeah, I was diagnosed with spondylolisthesis, which is a type of scoliosis. It was like a curvature of the spine. Mine was found very severe. It was. As a kid, I was really nervous to say anything that something hurt or that something was wrong with my body. I was nervous at the time to mention that to my parents.
Why?
I didn't want there to be something wrong. I wanted to keep playing, and I wanted to keep doing track and field and keep playing basketball and, like, all that stuff.
May I ask how long were you in pain before you decided to share it?
Yeah, I actually didn't outwardly share it. My mom just started asking questions because she noticed in basketball I wasn't like grabbing the ball like I normally would. I kind of like I don't know, adjust myself to grab it instead of comfortably just bending over. I'd start walking with a dead foot, so my one foot wouldn't do a heel toe, so it is a stomp. So one foot would be stomping as I walked. My mom would be like, why are you doing heel toe? Come on, heel toe. And then one day I was like helping her clean up in the kitchen. And I bent over kind of funny and to put something away. And she was like, what's going on? Like, why are you doing that? And I said, well, like, my back's kind of been hurting a little bit. It feels kind of funny. And then I started going into detail. I said, my legs go numb when I stand up for more than 5 minutes. Like, my feet, like, my leg and my feet go completely numb. I feel like, yeah, I'm not sure. Something just doesn't feel very good. Mm-hmm. And she kept a very straight face. Like, I had never felt like this is really bad. Like, my mom was like, straight face. She was like, okay, well, we're going to go and see a doctor. And we're just going to see somebody to see, like, if everything's going all right. And I said, okay, like, not making me feel like I did anything wrong. Because I didn't do anything wrong. It just felt like,
you're 12 years old.
Exactly.
You're trying to
I'm trying to grow up. I'm trying to enjoy myself.
Yeah. It's interesting how things we hide in order to keep, like, in a way,
to
like,
keep
the status quo, like, wanting to be because we don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to disrupt.
You're like, I'm enjoying where I am right now. Let's just keep this ride going.
Doesn't matter if I'm in, like, extreme physical
doesn't
pain.
Doesn't matter. We don't need to worry about this at all. I'm still laughing. We're good. that's pretty much it. She was like, okay, well, see a doctor. And I said, okay. So it was very lucky timing wise. We had a teacher strike for 2 weeks at the time when she asked this. So we got into a specialist pretty much right away. And, he was great. Dr. Penny, from the Children's Hospital, and he diagnosed me like pretty much right away. He knew immediately. My posture was very, my bum was very stuck out. My chest was very stuck out. I had, like, a funny little waddling walk kind of thing with the dead foot. It was very, very cool. And so he kind of saw and he was like, yeah, something's definitely going on here. He referred me to another specialist in Vancouver at the Children's Hospital in Vancouver. And I wish I could remember his name. He was a great doctor. Maybe I can ask my mom. We took some x-rays and it was pretty fast process in the sense of, like, getting it diagnosed. They saw the x-rays on the spine. It was at, like, 90% off of my tailbone, like, that area. And it was, like, a grade 5. It was, like, yeah, if you get knocked in the hallways funny, you could just, like, not have use of your legs anymore. They didn't really tell me it like that. They were very good. I was only 12, so they were like, okay, we're just going to adjust your school schedule a little bit. You're not doing gym anymore.
How did that feel?
It was kind of weird. How they adjusted the school system part was like, oh, you're going to be leaving class 5 minutes early at the end of the day. You're going to be kind of going in 5 minutes before everyone else at the beginning of the day. My best friend at the time, she was carrying my backpack because anything heavy load-wise was not okay. All of a sudden I was being, like, super doubted on, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's all right. Like, I don't know. It's kind
was
of
it a lot of like attention on
it was
you
a lot
that
of
point?
Attention. And at first I was like, oh, cool, I get to, like, cut class by 5 minutes. Oh, my God. Like, my friend and I get to leave 5 minutes early and go play or something. Like, that sounds great. But then it kind of felt weird because it was, like, very heightened senses being like, okay, you're definitely being, like, you need to be careful. You're not doing gym class anymore. You're not in, like, the halls with everybody anymore kind of thing.
Did that did you – like, because it's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Did you try to, you understood that this was really, really important. Did you understand that it was really, really important and to be make sure that you are mindful about how you move? Mm-hmm. Or were you trying to, or did you at any point go, oh, this is not cool? Because as you're entering adolescence to that idea of rebelling and not, you know.
Yeah.
Were you aware of that? Like,
I think I was aware of the severity in the sense of like, oh, this is important. My parents are like really making sure that I know that. I wasn't to the point where like, I just couldn't register like something really bad could happen. I wasn't registering that so much. What I registered more was my body's changing. It's looking different. It's feeling different.
In terms of adolescence or your body's changing in terms of like both in terms
of
your condition?
You see like, you see kids starting to change in that kind of time. And
which is a very hard thing to be dealing with as well. Because
you're also like, wait a minute. and you're like, hey, my body's being a little different than everyone else's in the sense of how I was postured. That dead foot kind of walk was, you know, really, really cool. And also a really great side effect of the condition I had was my butt started to, like, sink in itself. So I started to lose a bum, essentially. It was, like, very concave almost. So I put on jeans, and I would not be able to fill out my jeans anymore in a sense that it was, like, made me feel confident when I walked to school and stuff. I remember this so distinctly. I was walking home, and I, like, grabbed the back of my jeans, and they just were, like, so loose. They were so loose. I was like, what is going on? Like, where is my – it's like my body's leaving me. Like, what's going on here? And it was so – that part was, like – oh, I don't feel good about myself right now. Because I was like, this isn't okay. Like, my body's, like, deceiving me here. Where'd it go?
Wow, so you have this kind of... did you have this kind of body dysmorphia where you are... this is so interesting because we've never talked about this part at all.
No.
Is how did that... how did that make you feel about yourself? Where your this connection with your, you know, we have a sense of our body, right? Like that this is where we are. This is how we move, especially if you are physically very active, because it's a whole another level of awareness when you're physically very, very active. You are into your body. You know it in some way. You have a deeper understanding of it, and when you have that kind of disconnection from it. Which is interesting because that's exactly where I'm at my age.
Yeah.
That kind of deconstruction that's happening for the past 6 months for me is this whole new idea of where I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
My body is not
it's not the same. We need to recommunicate. Yeah. Like we need to
relearn what's going
on. Exactly. And therefore the idea of slow training and all of that, slow movement training and all of that. But going back to you, which is interesting because I am having this dissonance. It's very disturbing to tell you.
Like, yes, it was like, definitely disturbing. I was definitely like, I don't feel like I'm like everybody else. And like, I know everyone wants to feel like their own person and original and everything, but all of a sudden you're not with like the status quo people. You're like, my body looks really different. My body's doing really different things than everybody else's. I think when that moment happened, I was, like, really upset because I was like, why is this happening? Like, what's going on? Like, how did this happen? There was no trauma. Like, I had no trauma in my life to this point to be given this, like, back injury. That's, like, one thing everyone wondered. Like, did you get hit in a car accident? Like, anything like that. nothing like that happened.
So you don't even have something to go back to or blame or just say, oh, this is what happened. It was suddenly you were this way.
Yeah.
Even though you were aware that the pain was happening and this is, but you didn't understand the extent of it.
Yeah. Things like I started running in track and field and I was really fast quotation marks, as a grade five. So I was really fast at the time. But then all of a sudden I tried again the next year to go running and I was like nowhere near the speed I felt slow. I was like, what's going on? Like I feel like I can't go as fast as I used to. All of a sudden my body's starting to change in this weird way. I can't step properly. I can't even, you know, walk properly. I can't do a heel toe walk. What's going on? Like just your average stuff that you think you're just going to do with everyone else.
How did you
cope?
Especially with that idea of like, oh, where is my butt? Like,
I was like, what happened back there? Where did you go? It was hard. I mean, I still like played. I luckily had like a really good friend at the time. She moved after I had back surgery, which was, that sucked, but, during that time before getting back surgery, it was great having her. Like, we played all the time. I had my little brother who, at the time, we also were good friends there. You know, it changes as we both go into teenage years, but whatever. At the time, we still played. We still had fun. I mean, my parents would still, you know, treat us all the same, just be a little different in that I wouldn't be playing sports as much or whatever it was. So honestly, I think about the time I got diagnosed in September and in middle September, and I had my surgery in February. So it was a few months.
Explain to, because most people won't understand how intrusive this procedure is, because it's not just the surgery part is intrusive, it's the post-surgery things you had to wear in order to maintain your spine.
Yes.
And it wasn't like it was a month or 2 months. It went on for a long time.
Yeah.
Could you please...
go into that.
Please create a visual for us about that. Please.
I got surgery early February, I think. And what the surgery was is it's an 8-hour surgery. They open up half of my back. At the time, I am only 12, so I'm still going through puberty and things are probably going to change. So they had to decide in the moment if they're going to do a few things. So one, they put in 8, like 3 or 4 inch pins in my back, and then they had 2 anchor pins because of my hips. They're like, those are going to change as you become a woman. Like, we're going to have to take those out in a year. So they had to decide in the moment if we're going to put those in. They only were able to pull my spine back about 50%. So it's only on, it's fused on 50%. We're at 50%. That's good. I mean, a lot of people actually do live with only about that much on their back without knowing anything. So we had an 8-hour surgery. My parents had to just go and do a day in Vancouver while I had the surgery because it's 8 hours long. They're like, please don't stay here. It went well. They put in the anchor pins. I had to stay in the hospital for about 2 weeks. My mom stayed in the hospital room with me. My dad slept for the first few nights. I was in ICU. So my parents kind of just like did an on and off shift of being in the hospital room with me and then sleeping in their van, doing that for a bit. And then mom stayed in the actual room I got while dad stayed at a friend's. So what I had to do in hospital was every 2 hours I had to rotate my body. So I would be sleeping on one side of my body and then I had tubes coming out of my back to drain fluid. And also you had, you know, your drugs and everything, IV stuff all hooked up to you as well.
Were you scared?
I'd say I was pretty scared going into that first surgery. I mean, I was a little anxious going into those surgeries. I mean, they were really good at Children's Hospital. They put like hilarious little pigtails for the electrodes to be on my brain. during surgery to monitor. And so we all, like, would laugh and joke about that before me going in. My parents are really good at that, too. And I had a stuffed animal where they let me bring it into the surgery room as they rolled me in. And my mom got to come with me until I fell asleep, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. I was, like, really nervous at that point. And I remember they put the gas on my...
the anesthesia.
Yeah, the anesthesia. Yeah. They had the... had an IV, and then they also had some gas to relax, I think, or whatever it was. And they said, okay, it should taste like root beer or something. And I'm like, I don't taste anything. And they all were laughing, and I was just like, okay. I kind of just, like, zoned away, and away I fell asleep. And the next thing I know, I was awake. I did wake up pretty anxious. This is something I learned about myself after going under surgery. I wake up pretty aggressive. I wake up pretty anxious, so I wake up and...
Even prior to the surgery?
I didn't know this until after. So the first surgery, I woke up and was like, I was ready to fight. I was like, and they just had to grab my hands and my wrists and tie them up to the bed so that I could, like, kind of relax again, and they weren't getting, you know, hurt or anything. I was only 12 at the time, so that's all right. But I've had surgeries since as an older person, and... need to remember to give that to the doctor. So I woke up, and I woke up with my mouth pretty dry. I didn't really know what was going on. I was just kind of like, I want water. And they're like, you can't have water. You get a sponge.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's a sponge?
Things on your lips to wet the lips, and you're so thirsty.
Yes, you're so thirsty. Oh, my God, I can't believe how thirsty I was.
Yeah,
I was
like, so I remember that after my cesarean, too.
Yes.
Was that thirst. Like, I remember that thirst so clearly, and the want
that.
To drink, like, water. And then finally when I did get it, I remember, like, gigantic
glory.
Yeah, glorious. And ever since then, I have to say, like, water is my drink of choice.
I know.
And has been ever since.
So refreshing. People
it's
need to
so
know
necessary.
Water is just the most refreshing. That was a very vivid memory of wait. I didn't remember the aggression. I just remember waking up the second time and just wanting so much water. My dad was like, I can't get you any. I'm like, no. So I was there for 2 weeks. I had to roll over every couple hours to make sure that I wasn't, you know, getting any bed sores or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Excruciating trying to roll over. I hated that
most. Had to do that on your own, or you had assistance?
We had two nurses and my mom normally, and it was kind of like a lift and roll.
I'm so sorry.
It was, I mean, it was good in the sense of like...
No, it is, but I think
as a child, you're
it's
like...
the anxiety of, like, it's coming, it's
you're
coming.
Like, it's coming, oh my
yeah,
God,
I'm,
here
yeah,
I go.
Yeah. How long did that go for?
They did that. So I was there for 2 weeks, and that was going on for all of those 2 weeks. I had to do that. And
then you went home?
Yeah, I had to, before I got to go home, I had to learn how to kind of get up with relatively low assistance. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn how to roll on my back or roll on my side, kind of push my arm into the bed as I, like, push myself up and be able to walk a few steps without, heavy assistance. That was really hard and really weird, because you think you know your body and all of a sudden you're like, I
we
can barely
yeah.
You think you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, I can't sit up,
yeah.
I can't walk, I like, it was a shuffle, it was like I was 80 or 90 years old. It was just so weird.
You probably didn't even know that that's what an 80 or a 90 year old felt.
Not at all. Not at all. I was like, what is happening? This is just so strange. And so, you know, learn that. It took a couple of, like, a week or so to be able to do that. I had to do a physio thing where I was able to have enough strength in my breath to, there was, like, a little contraption with three balls in it. Mm-hmm. And you had to, I think it was, breathe in really hard. And the three balls have to come up. So the first one's easy, the second one's a bit harder, and the last one's the hardest. So as soon as I was able to do that and able to get up and walk and also, like, go to the washroom, I was able to go. But I had to get a back brace. So that was pretty much right under my chest, right to the end of my,
your
to my
pelvic
legs.
Area.
Yeah, right to my pelvic area. And had to wear that 24/7.
Like a corset?
Yes. Like a very much like a corset.
Except like it's right underneath your breast area.
Yeah, instead of like it being on your breast. Yeah, yeah, it's just under, and is pretty much my entire torso. I have a pretty short torso, so it's most of my torso, and I had to wear it every day, and the only time I could take it off was for like 5-10 minute showers, and when I got to go to bed. So those are the only times I could take it off. It was very fashionable. I had to wear a tank top, and then I wore the brace, and then I got to wear another shirt over top. And it had a nice little back flip on the back. The back of it looked like it was like a little ski ramp. Like just
a little tail.
Like a little tail, like a little duck's tail or something. Yes, it was very cool.
That was coming out. Like, okay.
Oh, very, very noticeable.
Visible.
Very visible.
How old are you now at this point?
You're still 12.
You're still 12. Okay.
I took a month off school.
Yeah.
That was hard because I got bored. And I also had to kind of self-study a little bit, and I was really bad at self-studying, and especially with math. That was a big one. They were like, you have to keep up with your math, and I'm like, I don't
While you're trying to recover from this
recovering from this massive surgery.
Surgery and the trauma of, like, reorganizing with your body, you're just like, I also, on top of that, I need to keep up with my
math homework. And I'm like,
seriously?
There's just no way. I was like, I'm lost here. Things you learn. And
priorities here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really focused on my math right now.
So my physical and by the way, the mental. Yeah.
The mental trauma that comes out. Of it all. And that was
remember,
hard.
Mathematics is important. Like,
remember that you need to do your math and you have to do these chapters while you're away. And I'm like, oh, good God, I can barely do it with a teacher. How am I supposed to do this by myself?
Yeah.
And sorry, I was only 12.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I mean,
I apologize on behalf of our education system.
On the educational system. Yeah. Oh, wish we all could change it up a bit. But so then I got to go back to school. And that was same kind of thing, very, very much aware. You couldn't get jostled. I had to be very careful in that. I wasn't taking gym class.
Were the students made aware of your condition at that point? So everybody was kind of aware.
Kind of knew.
Did the school actually tell? Because
not the school, but my class. So like the one class I had, which is pretty much the one you have for everything
the entire.
Else.
Yeah, that's right. You're with the class throughout the year. Yeah,
maybe you have with different people, but. Yeah, pretty much my class knew. So they knew what was happening. I remember getting stuck in my chair once for my little ducktail. That was kind of lame. I just, like, got caught and I was kind of stuck and I couldn't get up.
What happened? What?
It curved underneath the seat hole in the back and I just couldn't get up and I had to kind of, like, shimmy my way out of there.
How did your class respond to you? Was there any difference in their treatment towards you? Did they...
I didn't really notice it as much. I think they were just aware and they're like, oh, something's going on with Rachel or she's going through this surgery and like we just have to be careful physically around her. Otherwise I didn't feel like really doubted on by people in that sense. It was just teachers mostly, but friends.
But did they what I meant to say is like did they react differently towards you? Was that like something
They probably were a little bit more sensitive to me, which was kind of nice.
Wonderful.
Yeah, like my friends were a little more sensitive. I wasn't really paying attention to other people at the time. I also was kind of removed from that just because of like what was going on. I just had to be pretty removed from that. So
so there were no like mean people.
Mean kids. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it was just young enough to be kind of under the radar. And I just, like, was never putting myself in a position of people being like that to me. So I luckily had friends that were really, really nice. And the yeah, the popular kids at the time, I think they were just starting to learn. They're becoming popular.
Yeah, that's a transition anyway.
They're learning,
cool. I'm so special.
I'm special in a different way than all these other people. I don't think they quite knew that was happening for them. I think it was just, like, the tides were turning at that time. So luckily it got, like, under the radar for any type of bullying, which is really great because that would have been so hard. That would have been so much harder.
Yeah, absolutely. And sad. It would make me so sad. How was your sleep? How did you, like, now you were, I'm so, of course, interested.
Yeah.
And everything related to sleep.
Sleep. Well, when I had the back brace, I had to take that off. It was kind of a funny, like, routine. I had to figure out to take it off because I couldn't be sitting or standing. I had to be laying down when I took off my brace.
Oh.
So you kind of, like, make a routine of it where you had, like, you have, like, two straps that you Velcroed on. You have to undo that, and then you kind of have to open it up a little bit and slide your body out and then kind of pop it out of your ribs. It was a very... I just remember doing that pattern, like, every time before I went to bed. Mm-hmm. And I was a pretty good sleeper. I used to sleep on my stomach, but when this back thing happened, they're like, you're not doing that anymore. You have to sleep on your side or on your back. So I learned to do that, which is very difficult. It's not easy, but I'm happy I did learn that.
How long did it take you to
as soon as I learned in September that I had this back problem, people were just like, my mom was like, okay, you have to learn how to sleep on your side or your back. So we got, like, tennis balls in a sock and just kind of, like, shoved them in between my legs so that if I rolled onto my stomach or rolled onto my back, it would, like, push into my legs and not be comfortable. Mm-hmm. That was, like, one way of doing it.
A push right into your legs? Like, in between your thighs?
Yeah.
Oh, so interesting because we have what's called positional therapy, which is basically the lacrosse balls because tennis balls are a little too soft and they go between the shoulder blades.
Yeah.
So the people actually don't go on their back.
Right. It's
a lateral position rather than supine position.
Yes.
So you had tennis balls between your
legs.
Like between your legs.
Were
they tied? What was
it? It was like in a little sock. And you just tie the sock, and so then the space was you had the tennis ball like coming out on one end of the sock and the other end of the sock, and then this in the middle was flat and you could just have your legs together. So
your legs were tied?
No, my legs weren't tied. They were just like sitting together on top of each other, like one on top of the other.
Yeah.
So if I turned onto my stomach, I would feel one tennis ball like jab into my thigh.
And did that actually happen sometimes where you would
turn I feel like I was also just like heightenedly aware I had this between my legs. So I was just sleeping on my side a lot.
Interesting.
Did
you wake up feeling like refreshed? Do you recall? Because this is going way back.
I'd say I was getting pretty good sleep. Okay. I was a really good sleeper. I would sleep through literally anything. I'd sleep through like a fire alarm or an earthquake or
it's such a beautiful sleep around that time to just that pre-adolescent sleep is like gold. So it's the gold.
It's the best. It's the gold standard of sleep. It's the only time it feels this good.
Yeah, you just feel you go to bed when you're tired, you wake up feeling fantastic and you're ready to go.
I was a really good sleeper, and then when I was a teenager I loved sleeping. Mm-hmm. I loved sleeping in. Waking up early was definitely difficult.
Yeah, that's a normal part of being a teenager.
Learning to wake up at like 7 a.m.
Yeah, biological clock shifts. Yeah.
Oh my God, difficult. I remember that. I remember waking up hard. I was very much a night owl. I like staying up late. I like sleeping in late.
Mm-hmm.
My sleep was pretty good, I'd say. I just slept. It was great.
And then would you how long was this? How long were you in the corset or in the brace?
I'm calling it corset. It does look like a corset. It was a very interesting looking
Imagine women had to wear that for such a long time.
Eating was hard.
Yeah.
Because you can't eat too much or else you start
Well, this is Western women. I just want to be clear. Like, this did not happen in the East, although I think there was foot binding going on in the in China.
There's another type of...
There was another... there were bindings of all kinds, but I'm talking
We just went to the corset, just to the belly button.
Yeah. And eating was hard, you said.
Yes, yeah. Sit down for dinner and you have this corset on. Mm-hmm. It's tight. It's tight to your body. You're not... It's not loose. And if I ate too much, like, it just was so much pressure. I was allowed to, like, loosen it a little bit if that happened, but you just, like, you weren't supposed to be eating, like, that much because you have to stay, like, you have to stay tight with your body. You can't let it be loose while it's recovering, while it's fusing. So it was, and I love to eat, so. Yeah. So that was really challenging.
How did you come to terms with that?
I ate a lot slower.
Interesting. Yeah. As it's recommended.
Yeah, as you are supposed to. As people say, it's very good.
Retrospectively, you're like, oh, these are all fantastic things I learned. Yeah.
Yes, it was. So I was always the last to be eating. Mm-hmm. I would just have to learn to eat slower. So I started talking lots, you know, at dinner time, making jokes, whatever.
Amazing. That's so awesome. You found all these ways to be like, okay so I can't eat super fast and I can't loosen my thing. What do I do?
Yeah, what can I do? I still want to eat everything on my plate. How can I do this?
Yeah. How long did it take you to eat then? Like a meal, you would say?
Like 30 minutes. Yeah. Okay. Like a good 30 minutes, maybe 45, depending how big the meal was. And honestly, by the time I was still eating a third of my meal, my brothers were already cleaning their dishes and leaving them.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, bye. And then I remember just being usually the last person at the table. Like, my mom would stick around if she could, or she'd go to, like, work or whatever. But my dad was, like, starting to clean up. My mom was starting to clean up. Everyone's cleaning up, and I'm still eating away. And I'm like, okay, I'm almost done. So I ate a lot slower when I was that age. I don't say I'd keep that up now. I'm pretty fast at eating still, but... But at the time, I definitely slowed down, which was nice. I mean, I still got to eat everything.
So, how long are you in this corset for now? Sorry.
I was, like in it for 5 or 6 months.
5 or 6 months.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, so after 6 months, what happened?
I got to take it off, and it was amazing. I remember getting a card from my doctor.
Yes.
And... I was so excited. I went to go and pick up the mail that day. My mom was like, you want to go grab the mail? I'm like, sure. Walk over. I grab it. I see it's for me. And I was just like, oh, what is this? And I read it. And it said, I think it was a birthday card. It was like, happy birthday. You get to, like, take my gift to you is you can take off your brace. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God. I was so excited. I ran in and I just ripped it off. My mom was like, what are you doing?
And I was like,
I get to take it off. It was really freeing and weird. It was kind of like a security blanket in a sense, but at the same time, I was just so excited.
And then so now it's off, and are you in physiotherapy or anything in a way to learn, to relearn movements and relearn how to get reintroduced to your body?
Yes. I did a lot of physiotherapy. I also did a lot of yoga and Pilates when I first got out of the brace.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. How many times?
I was doing it for like two or more years. I was doing that like probably 2 or 3 times a week. And it was just to learn, like, to move your body again. It was just body awareness. Learn how to move your body, learn how to strengthen your belly, like,
and was this,
you've lost a lot of that.
Was this paid for by the government, or this is coming out of your parents' pocket?
Yeah, that was coming out of my parents' pocket. What was paid by the government was my surgeries and my back brace. So I had 3 surgeries. I had the back brace. That was all paid for.
Do you remember how much it cost? Do you recall?
I don't remember what it was, but I remember being told at one point something cost $125,000. And it could have been the surgeries plus the brace. I just remember it being, when I was told that, it was very expensive.
Yeah.
So thank God that we had that available for us, that we have that healthcare system. Yeah.
Yeah, but the post-recovery cost was something that had to be, that was coming out of
my parents' pocket.
Yeah. And that was absolutely essential because you needed to learn
how to move again
yes. and to strengthen yourself because yes. if not, then you would be back to, again, another surgery, another $125,000.
You maybe fall into some sort of injury that you could have prevented.
And I don't want to end this conversation. I really don't because this is so fantastic. And I'm actually hoping that you're going to come back because I want to talk to you about your journey. Now you are a CrossFit athlete. I've seen you move. Mm-hmm. I have videos of you moving, which is like you're so powerful. It's so inspiring. It's so incredible to see you, the way you move, and how dedicated you are to the process of being physical in your way, mm-hmm. and the fact that you are a vegan CrossFitter, it amazes me to no end, and your dedication to the environment, which I am actually wanting to talk to you again about, and I'm hoping you're going to come back, and
100%.
We're going to have this conversation on diet,
yes,
and exercise,
love it.
And your love for
The planet. Yes, please.
Yes, please. Thank you, my dear friend. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Ruhi.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait for our next conversation.
Neither can I.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep and Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @RuhiSleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.